Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Austin Peterson here, Republican Senate candidate in the state of Missouri. Thank you so much for tuning in to the Freedom Report podcast. You can always find us on iTunes or on Stitcher at Stitcher.com, or you can download my application on Podbean.com. That's P-O-D-B-E-A-N, Podbean.com. We're one of the top 10 podcasts in 2017. Thank you so much for making this podcast so special and for all of the listeners. Today, I've got some very special guests. I'm here with Mr. Mark Young and Chuck Worry, both Hollywood conservatives who have deigned to join me today. Gentlemen, thank you so much for tuning in, for joining me today on my podcast.
It's great to be here with you, Austin.
Same here, although I'm not a Hollywood conservative. Chuck's the Hollywood conservative.
He's a Detroit conservative.
Detroit conservative, right.
Which
Detroit
is just as unusual as a Hollywood conservative. Perhaps even more remarkable.
Yeah, well, I'm very privileged and honored to have you both joining me on my show today. Thank you so much for coming on. So let's just get right into it. The world has been turned upside down with the presidency of Mr. Donald Trump, who took office despite all of the Republican opposition and the Democratic opposition, the Democratic machine. Right now, we're faced with the 2018 midterms. The Republicans are looking to maintain their majority in the House and Senate. Of course, many of these races that are going on across the country, Donald Trump will have an outsized impact in some of these races. So I guess my first big question is, do you think that Donald Trump will help in these midterm elections, or do you think that he will be harmed? Chuck, you go ahead and start.
Well, there's an interesting thing going on right now. Well, two, actually. I'll make it three. Davos is interesting because they're treating him like a rock star, and boy, the press had no idea that was going to happen. But he's done something that presidents, the good presidents of a capitalist country do. He is creating an environment that is friendly to business, and so if business comes here, it's friendly to its people. So it's going to benefit everyone. That's the Davos part of it. Then you have the investigating part of it with Mueller's investigation, which seems absurd at this point. We know so much about the collaboration between Hillary, the DNC, the FBI, the DOJ, how they've talked to each other, collaborated, colluded with each other through the with the Obama administration at the head of this. And then not only that, but colluded with Russia as well. And now we've got this investigation with Mueller going on that seems to be absurd in its nature, but it's still going on because that's the deep state. The third thing that's happening that may hurt us, and it depends on how it goes. I'm not sure where this is because this is such a departure for Trump. He's said to the Democrats, I will give you $1.8 million with the Dreamers, but you got to give me the wall. Well, $1.8 million to, you know, on their way to citizenship is huge. He said that he wasn't going to do that. That's not what he ran on. That could hurt you in the midterms if, in fact, that goes ahead. And yet, at the same time, it's really the only bargaining chip with these Democrats that are so hell-bent on giving citizenship or at least acceptance in our country to these illegals. So we're really between kind of a rock and a hard place. So is he. I have a feeling in my heart, I don't think the Democrats really want to do this. And I don't, you could offer them 3 million people and I think they'd turn it down. So we'll see how this plays out, but it's certainly against what Trump said he was running on.
Mark, what do you think? Do you think Trump helps or hurts the 2018 midterms?
First off, you got to keep in mind, Austin, every poll said that Donald Trump wasn't going to be president. Fox News was saying he wasn't going to be president on election night. I mean, if any place was going to pick him, you'd figure Fox News is going to be that. So all of the polls that are out there that are showing Donald Trump not having the popularity that the Main Street, you know, news tries to say, those polls are off by a considerable amount of numbers. He has a lot more support, a lot more, I think, grassroots support than the polling data would ever let you know. And one of the reasons, as Chuck knows, is they overpoll Democrats in most of these polls. And the second reason is people are so afraid today to say that they are a supporter of the president that they'll deny it even if they are, because the reaction to it is so violent, even in polling data.
Well, you know, you make a good point, Mark, with the polling situation, because polls today are not really reflecting what people are thinking. They're shaping an opinion.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
We're using polls to try to influence people rather than to show what people think. So I think he has a lot more influence than people give him credit for. I believe in a Missouri. I mean, Donald Trump took Missouri. And I think that he's going to have a big impact on the Missouri election. It will be interesting to see, in my opinion, be interesting to see who the president's picks are versus who Mitch McConnell's picks are.
Yeah. And the other thing is, by the way, you notice that your senator there, Claire McCaskill, did not take the vote with the Democrats on shutting down the government. So she's trying to protect her backside, saying, I'm just as conservative as everybody else.
Yeah, what was interesting about that, though, even though she voted to keep the government open, she voted against the tax bill that was very popular here in Missouri. There were
absolutely.
Thousands, yeah,
there's thousands, no Democrat that can take credit for that tax bill at all.
Correct, yeah.
Including her.
Right, thousands of Missourians here got bonus checks in excess of $1,000 to $2,000. Right. And so she's going to have a lot to answer for in this coming general election. So the big 900-pound gorilla in the room that you brought up, Chuck, was the Mueller investigation that's going on, which to me seems like a lot of smoke and mirrors. But if we're going to play devil's advocate here, one of the things that happened recently, it was a big story, was that his former chief strategist, Steve Bannon, came out and was found to have called Donald Trump Jr. Treasonous and unpatriotic, which sort of fueled the fire for the Democrats just to come after them. Do you think that this investigation ends up going nowhere, or do you think that there's where there's smoke, there's fire?
I don't think it's going to go anywhere. And I think that if Trump talks to Mueller, he will catch him on a process crime, which will be, slighting the truth somewhere, something like that, and then blow that out of proportion. I think that's what that's all about. I think Mueller is coming to this meeting, if in fact it happens, with an axe behind his back. He's not there to exonerate the president. He's not there to find the truth. He's there to convict him. So that's how I personally feel about that. Whether that's true or not, we'll find out. The other thing with Bannon is, Bannon has never liked Jared Kushner. He's never liked Ivanka Trump. He doesn't like either one of them. He didn't like the children. He doesn't think that they should be in the White House with their father doing what they do. And so it's a personal thing with him. I don't take it seriously.
And do we really know that he said this treasonous comment, or is that hearsay?
Well, he apologized, right? So I think that if he hadn't said it, he probably would have denied it. And probably people would have taken the bait and said, hey, well, he did deny it. And there would have been a lot more stories about that. That being said, I think it did have an extreme impact on what he did. If he had denied it, probably he would still be at the head of Breitbart right now, which sort of leads me into my next big question, is to talk about the role of the media when it comes to shaping our electorate. It's not just polls that are commissioned to sort of tell people how to think rather than to tell you what people think. But every single day when you watch the mainstream media, when you watch CNN or you watch MSNBC or any of these things, it's just a complete, hate fest for our current president. I think it actually makes people like President Trump more, because the mainstream media is so despised and hated that I think it causes people to think, well, they've got an agenda to take him down. Do you agree with me that there's this major bias and agenda against the president by most of our mainstream media organizations, gentlemen?
There's absolutely no question about it. And plus the fact they are so arrogant with it, and they feel so privileged with their First Amendment rights that they can dish it out. But when Trump comes back and pushes at them and calls them fake news, which they are, then they just react violently and start taking a victim position when saying, look, we're the ones who give you the news. We're the ones who do everything. Well, journalism primarily is just dead. And the reason it's dead is because of cable news, frankly. Everybody's trying to stay ahead of the curve, so they don't do any kind of in-depth investigating anymore. So that part of journalism is just deader than a doornail. So we're going on hearsay and what people are saying over here, and there's an undisclosed source over there. And the New York Times, the Washington Post, everybody, CNN, MSNBC, even Fox to a certain extent does the same thing. They're all running, trying to capture the headline of the day, and they're not really digging deep enough into these stories to find out what's going on. So as a public, we're just totally misinformed most of the time, or uninformed, depending on how you look at it. So it's a very difficult situation. I mean, Mark Levin refers to the press as the Praetorian Guard. They are liberal at heart. They will take the liberal point of view. They will spread that point of view, so they will attack anything that's conservative. And by the way, President Trump has been, you know, Art Laffer said he's been more conservative than Reagan, and Art Laffer was right in the middle of this thing. That's quite a compliment, quite frankly, and I don't disagree with him. I've been saying that for months, that I thought that President Trump was at least as conservative as Reagan, so that'll make him hated as well, because the Republican Party, oddly enough, in its establishment, despises conservatives as much as they do liberals. So
I mean, we live in a world right now where, and I'm not, this is not meant to be a joke, the National Enquirer is more accurate and more reliable than CNN.
You know, you're right. That's amazing.
That's not a joke.
No, it's not.
Well, they broke the Monica story back in the day, so they do occasionally get it right. Okay, so I'd like to talk a little bit more specifically about the state of the Republican Party. I mean, obviously, I'm seeking a Senate seat, and you know, previously I was a member of the Libertarian Party, and you know, I had a lot of criticisms for then candidate Trump, because you know, he would oftentimes say things that to me sounded like they were right out of the progressives playbook, like raising, and turns out most of it came from Bannon, like raising taxes on the rich. Mm-hmm. You know, some of the tariffs that I think free marketeers definitely, you know, oppose. And now, you know, having seen him after his first year in office, you know, I've come around to the guy, not because, you know, I just, it's convenient, but because he's actually passed a lot of the types of reforms that a libertarian Republican like myself really wants to see. But here's what I'm faced with right now. You have a Republican Party that is polarized around this personality, and many of the sort of never Trump Republicans, who I think in many ways have gone off into what we call Trump derangement syndrome, are seeing this as like it's some sort of like complete 180 on my part, because I think that there's a lot of good that the president has done, and I'm trying to remain objective about it. And then you have pro-Trump Republicans, people who have, you know, they were with him the whole time, who are like, well, Austin, you're just you know, an opportunist who's just trying to like get elected as Republican. And it's just sort of the Republican Party is torn down the middle, where it's like there's no room for objectivity anymore. Like you can't say, if you say something nice about the president because you agree with him on an issue, well, then the never Trump Republicans hate you, and they'll destroy you in the pages of the you know, Wall Street Journal or whatever. And that, but if you offer a criticism of the president, like, hey, I don't agree with this tariff, you know, the new tariff that he passed, you know, because you stand on principle, then you're going to get destroyed by the pro-Trump Republicans. So okay, what is an objective liberty Republican supposed to do?
Here's why no one's objective with this.
Right.
And it's really simple. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of people, and I understand why, that hate Trump for his style. They hate it. They don't like it. They think it's unpresidential. They think he's a rube. They think he's a pig, whatever it is. But once you get past that style and you look at the substance of what he's done, and that's what you've done. You've gotten past the style and look at the substance. Most people can't get past the style to look at the substance. They just won't allow themselves to do it. And that's where your never Trumpers are. They're all wrapped up in style.
And right, Chuck's got it right. Chuck's point is correct, and that is the focus in the media, which means it's the focus of what people are trying to portray themselves. It is all style over substance. Trump has a, you know, what would you call it, Chuck? A Teddy Roosevelt style.
Well, it's almost. He's a abrasive kind of New York style, and that's what it is. It's a business, New York kind of business style is what I would call it.
But the substance matters. I want to say one other thing for Austin, too, and that is, we've allowed the media to get us so wrapped up in this concept of flip-flopping. Mm-hmm. So we go and we dig up a story. 35 years ago, Chuck Woolery said X. and now he has changed his mind. He's a flip-flopper.
Right.
I don't want a politician. I don't want to elect anybody who is holding on to the exact same beliefs and the exact same ideas from 5 years ago, 10 years ago, Mark, 35 years ago?
Austin, Mark, here's the deal. Here's really this in a nutshell. Yeah. Republicans flip-flop.
Yeah.
Democrats evolve.
Good point.
It's true. They are evolved.
Just but, a nightmare. It's just such a nightmare, gentlemen, to sort of be running for office in this current, the way that things are right now, because the zeitgeist is so the general zeitgeist of the media is that, they hate Trump. It's awful. And what seems to me is that many of these Republicans, you want to talk about flip-flopping. They'll go through any leaps and bounds in order to justify their hatred of Trump, including throwing the principles that they had held out the window that they did hold, 5 years ago, right? So if he goes for the Iran deal, then the Iran deal is bad. If he goes against the Iran deal, then the Iran deal is good. And I think Trump derangement syndrome has infected everybody. And for me, it's so frustrating because I'm a candidate who's rooted in principle, right? Not about personality politics, but it's like, what advice would you give to someone who is rooted in principle versus personality?
That's my advice that I was, while you were in the middle of that little diatribe you were going through there, yeah, was that, you stick by your principles. Forget what the press is saying. Forget what Trump does. Forget everything else. You stick by your principles and people will respect that if they think that you're honest and true to your principles. I really believe that. That may be naive on my part, but I think it's true. Now, politics are not principles. Let's face it. They never have been. They never will be.
Right.
So, you be true to yourself.
And many of your principles are going to line up with the president.
Right.
Right.
And your job is going to be that you're going to have to be able to define to your voters. And first off, you don't have a problem defining it to the Trump supporters, but you're going to have to define to your voters that these are my principles. Here's 20 things that's important to me. The president lines up with me on 15 of them. Mm-hmm. There's 5 of them that we don't line up on. But the challenge for you will be separating the principles from the hatred of the man, Donald Trump.
Right.
Well, the other thing is, there's another thing that's going on that I think you can take to the Senate with you, and that is this. Deregulation, this whole thing about in government setting the environment for business to prosper, that is an extraordinarily strong position to take. And it takes a little bit of explanation. Most people think that regulations are good. They don't realize that they literally do not create a good environment for business. Obviously, you need some regulation, but Democrats have a tendency to over-regulate everything because they want the state to win. They're not business-oriented, they're state-oriented. And that's a great separation for anyone like you who's running for office, that you're for business, business is for the people, it's jobs, 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 and I don't care what anybody says, it's always the economy, stupid. Mm-hmm.
One of the big issues that we're sort of facing right now, I'm torn between being a candidate and having a good show. I think I'm going to go for the good show right now and talk about something that's really a big story. I don't know if you guys have seen, but there's a sort of fringe candidate who's running this Republican primary who's getting a lot of press today and yesterday over some comments that he made about feminism, specifically that he was saying that he wanted to have a wife who had dinner on the table at 6 p.m. He was, calling women like screeching harpies and saying that they had snake-filled heads. And now the left-wing press is picking up. Stephen Colbert, Rachel Maddow, Valerie Jarrett is tweeting about this guy in the Republican Senate race. He was a big Roy Moore guy, a big Roy Moore supporter. And one of the things that seems to be a challenge now with the Republicans is that, this kind of rhetoric can play well in a Republican primary, but then if you look at what happened to Todd Akin the last time a guy ran against Claire, he had those kinds of inflammatory comments and it lost him the general.
Why even make inflammatory comments like that? Look, we don't live back in the 50s in the nuclear age. I was there. I know what it was like. The feminists have now created an environment where they said women can have everything. They can work, they can raise children, they can take care of a husband, they can do all those things. Well, fine. If they believe that, that's fine. Let them have it. Mm-hmm. The point is, you don't need to criticize it. It's where we are today. That is mm-hmm. the environment we live in, whether we like it, whether we approve of it or not.
But Mark, I think we're getting confused on this stuff.
Yeah. Mark, I was going to ask you, just kind of drive the point home. Do you think that there's a problem with what plays well in a Republican primary may not play well in a general?
Well, a lot of times people, as you know, they're a lot of the primaries are candidates are trying to appeal to the far ends of their parties, trying to, really get the far end base to come out and vote because people don't turn out in the primary. And there's a tendency to gravitate more toward the middle. I have found that that's more of a presidential thing than I think it is. Certainly not as much congressional, somewhat Senate, senatorial. I want to go back to this guy's comment for a minute. So this guy says he wants a wife who has dinner on the table at 6 o'clock. Mm-hmm. By the way, So now, see, this is where you have to parse words. I don't think there's anything wrong with what, with him saying what he wants. It becomes a problem when he says, this is what everyone should want. This is what everyone should do. Because there are women out there who
listen,
would like
let
to
me
stay home and make dinner at 6 o'clock.
I know Mark's wife very well, okay? She works. She works in the business. She works all the time. She has dinner on the table every night.
Yeah, you're right. But I don't think there's anything wrong with someone saying, I like that. But you can't say that that's you. It becomes a problem when somebody's going to say, well, this is what everyone should have. Now, you start getting to, you know, women are screeching, have snakes in their heads. That's he's got a problem.
Yeah.
Well, see, the thing is,
would you like to give your testimony, brother? Well, I don't think I'd have said that.
Right, exactly. Because, I mean, the thing is that, you know, the problem is that just because you're right, it's not going to necessarily help you get elected, right?
No.
The problem is you can be right all day long on the issues, but if you're alienating half of the, or more than half of the electorate, then you're going to have a problem in a general election. And Claire McCaskill is fundraising like crazy off of this today. It's got the Democrats riled up. So, I mean, and the thing is that, you know, you've got this weird situation where you have like my establishment competitor, right? Josh Hawley, who is like the Mitch McConnell pick in the race. And then you've got the fringe guy on the right. And here I am in the middle, just trying to be that principal candidate. And you can get lost in the din because the Democrats want the craziest guy in the room, right? Remember, Claire McCaskill actually helped Todd Akin win the primary. She wants to go up against somebody like that. She doesn't want to go against somebody like me or somebody like Josh Hawley, because Josh Hawley has the establishment support. He'll have a lot of money, and I will be able to appeal to a general electorate because I'm not crazy, right? So I guess the problem is that we face right now, whereas we want to stick to our principles and things like that, but just because we're right doesn't mean that, you know, we're going to necessarily win the general election. All right.
You know, Trump did something that I think is a great part of his portfolio. He was very controversial when he ran, let's face it, not only by who he was, but what he said. There's nothing wrong with saying the truth and saying it vehemently, with great passion. And I think that's where a lot of people miss it. They don't really have, the right doesn't have the passion of the left, which always disturbs me. The left is very passionate about taking our country down the wrong road. We're not very passionate about keeping it on the right road. And I think that if you can engender passion for what you're talking about and display that, people want to get on that bandwagon of passion. They want to, it's a fervor. You've got to stir the pot.
Let me expand on that for a second, Chuck. On races I've been involved with, Chuck is correct, and that is there is always a tendency on the part of a lot of Republican candidates to try to play it safe. Mm-hmm. Let's, you know, stay within the rails. Let's not get too far in this way. Let's not get too far that way. When you put Donald Trump on the stage with all those other presidential candidates,
he's off the rails.
He sucked up all the air in the room.
By being off the rails.
Now, the Democrats, in contrast to Chuck's point, the Democrats are pretty much always willing to be off the rails. So that's one of the great challenges, because the Republicans, maybe there's a better way to say it. When Republicans and Democrats face off to win a seat, they're playing by different rules. And that's where the challenge is.
Well, the Democrats have no rules and Republicans have them.
That's the point. The Republicans are trying to say, well, this is the right way to do this. And let's do this and let's do that. And let's stay in the middle and let's make sure that we don't, you know, use any language that offends anybody. And then the Democrats are coming out and they're willing to offend our side.
Everybody. And then claim they're offended.
But the Republicans are oftentimes afraid to offend their side. So if I was running for Senate in Missouri or in any place, what I would do, and get Chuck's opinion on this, I would completely be 100% in. I would be relentless against the left because when I say the left, I'm not even worried about the middle of the road Democrats. I'm talking about the hardcore socialist
progressives,
the progressives, which is what Democrats are being. I would go all in on them. I mean, I would go at them, because guess what? The guy who comes at these people the hardest, the guy who makes the biggest statements, the person who is the loudest in the room is the person that's going to get the press and the person people are going to hear.
Right,
that's why Trump won.
Yeah, it's a really good point. Of course, it's very hard to kind of capture the sort of magic that Trump has, because he was just such, he's such a wild card, right? It's very difficult. You can try and
well, you can't imitate him, but yeah, you can certainly emulate him in a lot of different ways, because it works.
Right.
Actually, Trump ran like a Democrat.
Yeah.
I mean, think about it. He really worked.
Mm-hmm. He ran like a Democrat, and it confused everybody on the stage.
They're still confused over it.
But all right. A guy like you, you've got great principles. You've got the ability to speak. You know, you were saying something about, you know, libertarian and people saying you know, were a libertarian and now you're a Republican. I tell you what my answer to that would be. I'm a libertarian. Mm-hmm. I vote Republican. And the reason is because libertarians don't usually put up candidates that I can get behind or that might win. I find the Republicans are closer to me than the Democrats. Same issue with Chuck. And the bottom line is, you're not jumping on a Trump bandwagon. You're following your passion, following your beliefs. And the president is, you know, happily surprising you and becoming a conservative.
Yeah. Yeah.
Agreed. I mean, you're not abandoning libertarianism. We have a president who's behaving much like a libertarian.
Yeah. Well, like the other night, I gave a speech to in a rural county here in Missouri, and some of my old libertarian friends jumped all over me because I'm an agnostic, right? So I have some deep seated questions about, you know, what my faith and things like that. And, you know, I'm not a type of person, I believe in religious liberty and all of that, but it's getting around Missouri. They say, well, Austin, a gentleman got up and said, Austin, do you believe in God? And I told him, honestly, I said, well, the true answer is that I don't know. I said, but I'm a big believer in religious liberty, you know, and I'm willing to keep an open mind and go to church with my friends and all of that. And then we said the Pledge of Allegiance, and I said, you know, he said, well, yes, well, you said the Pledge of Allegiance, right? But in that you say under God, right? So how is it that you could say the Pledge of Allegiance and then not necessarily mean that portion of it? Well, and I said, well, because I'm a proud American nationalist, right? And now the word nationalist sort of fired up my base, right? They're like, oh gosh, because it has these negative connotations with like the alt-right and a lot of these people who are, you know, hyper-nationalist to the extreme, right? So white supremacy and things like that. But I've always loved my country. I've always stood up for our Constitution. And I say the Pledge of Allegiance because my loyalty is to my country. Why do you think I'm running for office? Because I'm trying to serve this country. So my question to you guys is do you think that American nationalism in its modern form right now, do you think that this is the way forward for the conservative movement, despite the negative connotations? I can hear you chiming in, Chuck. Go ahead.
I must tell you, I want to jump all over this. Yeah. The left has turned nationalism into Nazism.
Right.
That's what they do. They think it's fascist. Well, that's anything but fascist. And you know, we've gone through this since the 60s, this whole thing about, you know, jumping on the flag and not being patriotic and all of that. That's strictly left, basically Marxist kind of junk that's been in our streets and in our schools and everything else since the 60s. That's where all of this comes from. I wouldn't even entertain it. Mm-hmm. I would just look at people and say, you know what? I'm a good American. I believe in my country. And that's it. Do I believe in Oslo, Norway? Fine. I don't live there. I mean, it doesn't matter to me.
Mark, do you think it's possible to be a good pro-life constitutional conservative, to love your country, and still have some deep-seated like reservations about questions of faith?
I'm going to top cap something on Chuck's. I'm going to answer that. First thing, the reason that people try to take nationalism and they try to say it's fascism is because the difference between socialism and fascism is socialism is global. Fascism is nationalist. Everything else is the same. So they've taken this slight truth that fascism has nationalism in it, and they try to turn that into conservatism. We need to get rid of the word nationalist. I'm going to ask you not to call yourself a nationalist anymore. I'm going to give you a different word. I want to say American exceptionalism, because that's what we need to do. We need to be behind the fact that America is exceptional, and that we need to worry about ourselves first. To answer your question, can you be a good American? Can you be pro-life? And can you be an agnostic? Well, the first off, an agnostic doesn't mean you don't have a belief in God. An agnostic means that you're not buying into, or you still have questions and you're not buying into organized religion as it is presented to you. Well, guess what? Organized religion is very complicated because everybody thinks they're right. So the idea that no matter what church I walk into, they're the only gateway to heaven and everyone else has it wrong is not very inviting on the part of the body of Christ.
Right. I've always believed that the body of Christ, that God is not really thrilled with organized religion.
Right. So my obviously I couldn't say this, but the first thing that I thought, because he stood up and he pointed at me and he says, do you believe in God? And my first thought was, I wanted to say was, which one? But of course, that would
be. Yeah,
that's not the answer you want.
Not the answer you're looking for.
Right? But again, I mean, the thing is like it's almost as there's a mistrust, right? There's a distrust of a conservative who's not religious, like, because they ask you, where do you get your principles from? And now we're finally getting into the final part of this conversation that I really want to talk about, which is our principles. There's like a distrust of a conservative who isn't necessarily religious, as if we can't hold the same beliefs in life and liberty and the Constitution as the rest of our conservative friends, our conservative libertarian friends. So, I mean, I guess that's one thing that's just deeply bothered me, is that it's we prefer people who are full of certainty rather than people who are honest and say they're full of doubt. I mean, I tend to trust someone who says that they have doubts because they're willing to be skeptical and to have introspection, rather than to say someone, oh, well, this is exactly what it is, right? But it's the electorate seems to prefer the people with certainty versus the people with doubt. And it's a real moral quandary, because it makes it sort of incentivizes you to sort of tell people what they want to hear, right? Rather than what is you believe is the truth, right?
Well, you know, most of our founding fathers were spiritual men. I'm not going to call them religious because I don't even like the word.
They were deists.
A lot of them were deists. The thing of it is that a lot of our principles are truly biblical. They really are. Where they came from, they're not only historical, but they're also biblical. I mean, you can go back to John Locke, you can go all these different, the Magna Carta, all of that. These are all really kind of, you know, based on, I guess you could call them biblical principles. Probably most of them are based on biblical principles and referred to in the Constitution and things like that as nature. These are kind of battles that you get into with three people, right? And it's blown out of proportion. It's not relevant to what you're doing or talking about, and it takes you off your message.
Right.
I would just get back to my message and just say, you know, this is a free country. We all have our feelings. We all have our beliefs. I respect yours. Yeah. I hope you'll respect mine. But about business and the government and what we're talking about.
Right. Well, that's what I try and do, because the whole thing was.
Now, that's what you do. You don't try and do it. You just do it.
Yeah. I mean, I gave a 15-minute impassioned speech on the Constitution, the Liberty, the Federalist Papers, my tax plan, all this stuff. And then, you know, the guy wants to push me on saying the Pledge of Allegiance. And it was just a little disheartening, you know, but I did get back and say, hey, you know, I believe in religious liberty. And I never want to lie to you about who I am or what I believe. You may not always agree with me, but you're always going to know where I stand. So, and the thing is in many ways,
I'll be praying for you.
Well, thank you. And I say that, right. And I believe in the teaching of Christ. Right. And I consider myself a Jeffersonian Republican. And when I take office next year, I want to swear my hand on Jefferson's Bible.
Here's the problem with most religious people, mm-hmm. and well-meaning people. I don't mean to disparage them in any way, but they expect everyone who is spiritual or religious to be perfect.
Right.
And we're none of us are perfect, and none of us. And it's very difficult for them to accept the imperfection of anyone they're looking up to, when in fact there's no one that they can look up to that is not imperfect.
Here's an answer I would have to that question. And my answer would be, if you were voting for me to be the senior pastor in your church, you would expect me to stand in front of you and tell you, I believe every word in all 66 books of this Bible that I'm holding in my hand, because that's what you want from me. As a senator, you want me to hold this U.S. Constitution in my hand, and you want me to tell you that I believe that everything in this U.S. Constitution is the law of this land, and that we are a nation of laws, not a nation of men, and that if I'm elected, I'm going to do exactly what's on this document, and I'm going to keep the federal government out of what is not in this document. As far as religion, I would make it very clear, I am not a religious person, and I tell people this, and I head a religious organization. And I tell people
I'm not a religious, I'm a bona fide born again Christian. I am not a religious person. Religion.
Absolutely.
If you look at the word religion and what it means to do something over and over and over again, it's repetition. I have no interest in that. Mm-hmm.
Religion has been the greatest perpetrator of evil on this planet through recorded history. Almost all the wars and so much death and destruction has happened throughout history in the name of religion. As a elected official, you don't want me bringing religion to this job. You see religion, you go to Iran and you see what happens when religion steps into politics. I'm a constitutionalist. This is the Bible of America, and this is what I'm going to stand for, the Constitution.
Yeah, right. This is my religion while I'm in office.
Exactly.
That's exactly what I stand for, guys. What a fascinating conversation. And I'm just delighted to have been able to make friends with both of you guys. I'd like to give you guys a chance to plug your show. So Mark, Chuck, please tell us where we can find more about you. Where can we follow you? And tell us a little bit about what you guys are working on.
I'll let Mark do that. Go ahead, Mark.
Well, it's easy to find us. You can go to bluntforcetruth.com. You can find the podcast there with Chuck and I. You can also, you'll see the trending news button, and you can get all the latest news all day long. You can find Chuck on Twitter, sometimes at 2 o'clock in the morning, sometimes at the oddest times.
In the morning, I was tweeting last night.
See, I told you. Sometimes you never, he's like, where's Waldo? Look, Chuck just popped up on Twitter. You can find him at Twitter at Chuck Woolery. You'll find me at Mark Young Truth. And Austin, I have a question for you. Now, do you have anything coming up? Question for you. Do you have anything coming up in Kansas City, Missouri?
Yes.
And let me give you the dates, because I believe I'm going to be stopping by Kansas City, Missouri.
Is this February 2nd, Lincoln Days?
This would be February, looks like February 23rd or 4th, right in that area.
Now, that I don't know off the top of my head. I know we've got a lot of Lincoln Days events coming up. I don't have my calendar pulled up in front of me. But yeah, if you're going to be there, then please come by headquarters. Let's go grab a beer after office hours and chat. You know, I hope that all my listeners and supporters here at the Freedom Report podcast will go and follow Mark Young and Chuck Woolery, learn more about these fascinating men and their ideas. Go to bluntforcetruth.com, subscribe to their podcast, which we actually did one earlier, but last week that's going to be coming out soon. So don't forget to check that one out as well. Gentlemen, it's an absolute honor and a pleasure, and I'm very grateful for you for coming on today. Thank you so much, and you all have a great weekend, okay?
Thank you, Austin.
Thank you, Austin.